Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good afternoon. Another American. Oh, my God. As it turns out, I haven't been here as long as Diane has been here. I've only been here this time 8 years. Prior to that, it was back in the late 70s, early 80s. I was here when the bombs were going off and working for a company that no longer exists. But it's actually really a great opportunity to see the lack of change that's happened between the late 70s and early 80s and today, and what we see in terms of drinking. Now, the difference is that when I was here back in the late 70s and early 80s, if you were drinking and you got drunk, you lost face if you were a guy. You never, ever got drunk. That didn't happen. As it turns out, today, that's all shifted over. A lot of people see that it's okay to get drunk, and people get drunk on a regular basis. Let's talk a little bit about that. Well, basically, what we've seen right now, that there are some shifts, some positive shifts, though. We now know that more young people, 11 to 15 years old, are not drinking. This is big numbers. I mean, it's 55% versus 45%. This is a big shift from where we were, and it continues to drop. And it's been dropping over the last 6 years. Parents are talking to their children about the risks of drinking alcohol and giving them alcohol, but they need to talk to them earlier. That research is already being seen. Because the age of first drink is still 14 years old. What we need to do is we need to raise that up. I mean, there's a whole lots of good reasons for doing that. But we now know the parents are talking to the children about alcohol, but we need to start talking to the children about alcohol when they're 10, 11 years old. Adults have a wider understanding of the implications of drinking over the limits on themselves. They can now name more health harms than ever before when they overdrink. We just did a national bit of research that we do every year to take a look at what adults do understand about alcohol. And in the past, they used to be able to say the first thing was always liver disease. Now they can start identifying heart, cancer, strokes, other things that are going on, and that's great for us. And one of the things you do know is, and I'm sure everybody knows, that this drink driving, I mean, amongst young people, I mean, it is absolutely taboo. I mean, the first thing you say is you're going to get in a car, you don't drink. I mean, everybody sees that now, and I think a lot of people, as a matter of fact, over the holiday season, I talked to a lot of people, and they were saying, they actually go into parties, and they tell people when they're given a drink, they say, look, I really can't, I'm driving tonight, okay? And everybody starts off that way. So there's always a designated driver. But we do know that 20% of people age 16 and over have drunk to binge drinking levels within the last week. More men than women. You can see 22% versus 15%. But that still is an issue that needs to be addressed. And when you think about that, has it really changed that much from where it was before? And the answer, I have to ask the question, I don't know if it really has. I mean, binge drinking has been around for a long time. It's not something that just started. It's something that's been going on. And we'll talk a little bit about that because there's two very different kinds of binge drinking. One is what we call the heavy episodic drinking. That's what you see pretty much, and we saw pictures of that this morning. We saw the picture of the young girl laying on the park bench, and you know she was out of it and everything else. That's the one that you always think about. But do you know where most binge drinking goes on? It goes on amongst us. How many people here are below 30 years old? Okay, we've got a couple. 30 to 45-year-olds, you're the binge drinkers of the United Kingdom. You're the ones that are doing it on a regular basis, trust me, a lot more than the 18 to 24-year-olds are. If you take a look at alcohol-related admissions, everybody was talking about a million alcohol-related admissions. When you take a look at those people that are coming in that went into NHS, you really took out the readmissions, and you took a look at the age of what those people are coming in. It's basically those alcohol-related admissions were people 40 years old and older. 80% of the population was 40 years old and older, not young people. They've stayed pretty well across the board for the last 4 or 5 years. But they're the ones that get the media coverage. There we go. So let's take a look at what's going on right now amongst the young people in binge drinking. Amongst young adults, 1 in 5 admitted to binge drinking levels within the last 7 days. 52% admit they go out drinking with the specific intention to go out and getting drunk. 76% agree that it's easier to enjoy a night out when you're out there with your friends, and it kind of builds confidence. It's kind of the glue that keeps the evening going. Okay, everybody kind of talks about it and everything else like that. There's a new set of drinking norms that are actually fueling binge drinking a little bit more than ever before, because we now know that 62% of young people are preloading. Now, I want to ask how many of you people go and preload at home before you go out drinking, all you 30-year-olds and older. I mean, everybody's doing this. But as it turns out, young people, 18 to 24 years old, can't afford to go out and drink heavily outside in the pubs or in the bars because they don't have the money. If you look at the next item that's down there, we have over 1 million NEETs. Over 1 million people are not in education, they're not in employment, they're not in training. This is a big issue, and this is the bubble that's going to be coming through, because guess what? There's going to be another bunch that are going to be graduating this coming year from university, and where are they going to go? And where are the jobs for them? And this is going to be clearly the two big issues to be addressed in the future: at-home drinking and people out of work. What we have found, though, from our campaigns, is that we have a campaign that was running over the, basically, it ran big between September and December. It's called Why Let Good Times Go Bad. Why Let Times Go Bad, but don't let a good night go bad. That's the kind of idea that was there, the concept. So basically what we were able to do was emphasize the good side of going out at night and a night out, provide tangible harm minimization tips and tools, basically eat before you go out drinking, pace yourself, drink water, those types of things. Watch out for your mates. And engage them through relevant channels. You heard a little bit about this morning about, we're talking about texting people and getting in touch with people that way. This campaign uses what young people use. They're not out there looking at television. They're probably going to be sitting there and they're going to be using their phones to communicate with each other. So texting them, using an application, that sort of stuff all makes a big difference. And what we don't do is we don't preach. We don't preach to them to say, you shouldn't be doing this, and we don't tell them to abstain from drinking alcohol, because they won't. I mean, I don't know how many of you have teenagers. I had teenagers. They're now older. But whenever you told the teenager, don't do something, what was the first thing they did? Okay, they did the opposite. That's what's going to happen. And we know that when you take a look at young people's drinking, the minute they turn 18 years old, the drinking just goes up like this, like a rocket. So we need to address those issues. We know they're going to be drinking, so we need to moderate and mitigate those issues around that. What we have found is that last year's campaign, we had over 200 million opportunities to see the campaign. Now, granted, that's not enough. I've got to tell you that right now. It's not enough. Because we hit 650,000 people probably seeing the campaign out of a group of about 6.3 million. We need to reach more people. But of the campaign, 27%, 850,000 regular drinkers recalled seeing it. Okay? Totally. 850,000. Not a bad number. And it's roughly double the industry norm and average for seeing a campaign. So we know that they got it. They saw it. 8 out of 10 people claimed that they reduced, they took on one of the tips, adopted one of those tips, which eventually, as it turns out, and 56% said they claimed to have changed their drinking behavior. That's huge. That's a big shift in terms of where people are going to. We know that we had 11,000 unique visitors to the mobile site and 9,000 people downloaded the mobile app. This is in within 10 weeks in terms of where the campaign's going. Now, the campaign runs this year all throughout the entire year, so we'll be able to measure what we're going to be doing as we go through the entire year. But we are seeing results. Young people are adopting their tips. There's less young people going out drinking to excess, although there is a core group of people, and we do know this amongst young people, that are drinking to excess regularly. And that's an area that we're going to need to address. Let's talk about us. Well, actually, not me, because I'm outside this group. I'm a little bit older than 44. But I could probably put myself in this group at some times. 41% of people 25 to 44 years old do not realize they're drinking over the daily unit guidelines. 41%. That's a lot. And the at-home drinking, especially amongst young adults, and especially amongst adults, they're drinking wine. 40% are drinking wine at home. Now, how many people don't drink wine at home? Don't. Five out of the entire audience. Not bad. So that means the wine people are going to be really happy out there. They're selling to you people. But the alcohol is also seen as a common anecdote. It's their excuse. It's the way to relieve stress. It's the way to unwind. You go back and you have a glass of wine, and that's how you do it. And that's what it's become. It's wine o'clock. Okay? We know what time it is. You put the kids to bed, have a glass of wine. Make dinner, open the bottle of wine, have a glass of wine while you're doing it, have a glass of wine while you're having it. Maybe break it, maybe split it with your partner, maybe not. Who knows? But we also know, again, the campaigns that had to ask adults to self-reflect and empower them actually work best. They take control. It's their personal responsibility. We know that we can bring to them the health harm issue, but we have to bring it to them in a way that makes sense to them. We ask them to reflect about their own drinking. We ask them and communicate unit guidelines. And we'll give you a couple examples. One of the examples you see there, and it's the one that looks like a bunch of vertical items, that's basically our excuses campaign. It's a digital campaign aimed at adults to talk about the excuses. It's been a good week. It's been a bad week. My boss loves me. My boss hates me. It's Monday. It's Friday. My team won. My team lost. All those things are inside. All those excuses to have a drink. But there's also a lot of good reasons to cut down. And what they do is that that campaign, which is very digital, just like the one that we have that was aimed at the young adults, basically what it does, it drives them down into the next visual that you see there, which is our My Drink Aware online resource. My Drink Aware is an online resource that allows people to track what they're drinking. They can put it in. They can challenge their partners. They can do whatever. It's best evidenced information. It's been looked at by our independent medical panel, given a stamp of approval. It's got virtually every kind of drink that you could possibly imagine on the tool. So you can go through that and use that. And as it turns out, it empowers them to take control of what they're doing and what they're drinking. And I'll show you some of the results. But one of the things we have to do, again, to remember is that we don't preach, we don't patronize, we don't tell them what they should be doing, we don't tell them that, you know, don't say stop drinking. What we do tell them is this is what you should be doing and watch what's going on. Turns out 120,000 people have signed up to My Drink Aware. Now, that 120,000 people that have signed up and are tracking their drinking on that, we know that not all of them are staying with it. And one of the reasons why we know not all of them are staying with it is because they probably went on it, took a look at it, saw what they were drinking, said, I'm in good shape. Because it has three different things that you, when you take a look at it, and if you get a chance to sign up for it. Basically, I might drink where it's got, I'm drinking at an okay level, I'm drinking at an increasing risk level, and I'm drinking at a harmful level. And the harmful level has got like a red line in it and everything else like that. This is, and it gives you tips and hints at how to bring down your drinking. So that's the whole idea. So it makes them aware of the health harms. At the same time, it gives them tips and other ideas about how they might be able to cut down. It tells them what it's doing to them, and maybe in terms of calorie count, what it's going to do to their weight, what it's doing to their pocketbook, what it's doing potentially in terms of other things that are going on inside their lives. We have 30,000 active users. 30,000 active users, which is not a bad number when you think about it. This is basically all online. We're reaching out to them digitally. We're getting them to sign up. They're now actively using that, and we do know that they're getting the whole an understanding of what's going on with units and unit guidelines. But more importantly is out of those 30,000 active users, they've said, they've come back and said they've reduced their alcohol consumption from 5 units to 3.9 units per day. That's a big drop. Now all of a sudden they're drinking probably within a less risky level. And if we can get more and more people signed up to My Drink Aware, think of what it could be doing. And that's really what we wanted to show you here today, is that there are ways to reach those people and reach them in a way that makes the most sense. And it's something that they can engage with. Now, we were having a conversation about whether or not it works for all different socioeconomic classes. Is this something that's only good for the upper middle class and people who are ABC1s? Well, as it turns out, that research shows that more people from the basically C2Ds and Es are online, or as much online, as people are in ABC1s. They have more time to be online. They're online a lot, okay? And we take a look at the numbers. Basically, this is going out the door to virtually the entire population inside this country, all across the United Kingdom. And the people that are signing up are coming in proportionally from different parts, the same population areas. As you can imagine, there's like 6 million people in Scotland. Well, whatever that's about 10% of the population, those are the people who are coming to My Drink Aware. If you take a look at how many people live in Wales, in Northern Ireland, those people are coming to My Drink Aware, and their percentages as well. So it's basically fairly representative across the entire country. So are they responding? Well, we see the key requirements of tackling binge drinking. One, harm minimization tips, especially for young people. Give it to them through relevant channels. As I said, digital has become important, and it's going to become even more important. As we look further down the road, and we're talking about 10 to 14-year-olds today, we have another program aimed at them as well. But they're what we call digital natives. Have you heard the term digital natives? These are people who are growing up in basically what we call the post-Google age. They live with it. They live with digital. Not like us. They're totally different. They're going to change teaching, totally. But they're also going to change the way that they get information, and that's what we're trying to do, is to tap into that. We're tapping into that now with our young adults by going to them, by giving them apps, being mobile, all that stuff, so that they can also reach the people when we know that we need to get to them, which is when they're out drinking. Adults need prompting to reflect on their own drinking. Trust me, they do. We all do. We need to be prompted. And so what we do is that we give them tips, yes, but we also email them. We can text them. We give them hints and reminders to come back. Don't forget, you got to sign up, that sort of stuff. So they're coming back to us on a regular basis. And they keep on coming back to My Drinking Water. This coming year, we're going to be looking at how do we retain more of those people that have dropped off, but also how do we acquire even more people coming to the tool. And parents need guidance in talking to their children earlier about alcohol. One of the things about the risks is that a lot of times parents think that I'll have that conversation with children, with our children, my children, about alcohol. And as it turns out, they wait until like they're 15, 16 years old. Parents usually rate sex and drugs are the two most important things they've got to talk to their children about. Well, as it turns out, the children, when we asked them what you're most worried about, they said alcohol and bullying. Okay? So if you take a look at, they mentioned sex and drugs too, but alcohol and bullying are the ones that that stand out for them. So they rank it a little bit differently than where the parents are ranking it. But parents need to talk to their children earlier about alcohol so it doesn't make it a taboo subject. It's not something that they're afraid of. It's something that they can actually engage with and have a conversation with. Okay? And that covers my presentation. So I figured that might bring us up to speed again in terms of time.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.